Well, this weekend is also part three of the series called Ancestors of the King. And I thought we'd just start with, some trivia, like a trivia game. So here's the category, Disney songs. The question is, what is the most popular Disney song of all time? So let me just give you a moment, okay? Think about it, find your answer. I'm going to give you the top five, according to Billboard magazine, okay? So here we go. The fifth most popular Disney song, Colors of the Wind. I got to confess, I don't even know how this one goes. I don't remember. Maybe you do. I cannot remember. It's too long ago. Number four, Let It Go. You know, Let It Go. See, okay, there we go. Yeah, well, thanks for leaving me out to dry there. Okay, number three, A Whole New World. I could sing every word of this song because it came out in the 90s. I'm not going to do that to you. But number two, Can You Feel the Love Tonight? Also not going to sing this one because it doesn't feel like a church-appropriate song. So we're going to leave that one out. Number one, what is the most popular Disney song of all time? We Don't Talk About Bruno. Who's surprised? Who's like, really? Yeah. Okay, I'll tell you who's not surprised. Anybody that had small kids in 2022 when this movie came out, like I did. I mean, just constantly. Can we listen to Encanto? Now, this movie Encanto, maybe you've seen it. It's the Madrigal family, and they have this Uncle Bruno. And, they don't talk about him. And the reason they don't talk about him is it's like a family secret. It's a major plot point in the movie. We don't talk about Bruno. There's something about him. It's like a family secret. It's like shameful. You know, it's embarrassing, and so they don't want to talk about it. We don't talk about Bruno. And I just wonder, you know, this is a series about family trees, ancestry. I wonder if your family has a Bruno. A situation. We don't talk about that. And I'm guessing that you do because every family has skeletons in the closet. Every family has some Brunos, and we don't talk about Bruno. But this series is specifically about Jesus' family, the ancestry of Jesus, as Matthew, the gospel writer, he gives us the lineage of Jesus. And what if I told you that there was a Bruno in Jesus' family line? And we get a little hint of this very early in the genealogy that Matthew provides for us. If you've been with us the first couple weeks of the series, you'll recognize this first verse. This is the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And it goes on. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac was the father of Jacob. Jacob was the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah, the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Now, this is very interesting and unusual because Matthew includes a mother. You know, it's all the father of, the father of, the father of, oh, and the mother of, and it's a woman named Tamar. This was like practically unheard of in the ancient world to include a woman in the genealogy because, you know, this is a patriarchal society and it was just everything was tracked through the men. And so Matthew chooses to include a woman in the genealogy of Jesus. But it's not just that. He includes five women. And the question is, why does he do this? Why did he choose to include the names of women? Well, again, his whole point in sharing this genealogy is he's trying to prove to his Jewish audience that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah. That's his whole point. And I believe that his inclusion of these five women, he's trying to share what kind of Messiah Jesus is. In other words, he wants to share the heart of God as lived out in Jesus. Because here's the thing about Matthew. Matthew was one of Jesus' 12 disciples. I mean, he walked with Jesus. He spent every day with Jesus for 3 years. And so he really saw Jesus. And he saw Jesus interact in all kinds of situations and with all kinds of people. He saw Jesus interact with some people that came from pretty messed up situations. People who are very broken, who had been through some of the most heartbreaking experiences in life. And it's very interesting that the five women that Matthew chooses to include in Jesus' genealogy, these women have stories that every one of them, in different ways, are incredibly heartbreaking. I mean, painful, painful stuff. And part of what I'm hoping for today for you, as we talk about some of these women and their stories, is I hope you find yourself in the stories of these women. Because I know that every single one of us has experienced pain and heartbreak. And maybe for you, that's because of something that was done to you, or perhaps because of something that you participated in. But I just know that every one of us has experienced pain and heartbreak. And I just want you to see and I want you to feel how Jesus engages broken people. And so we're going to take a little look at some of the stories of these women that Matthew includes. And we're also going to look at how Jesus interacts with women in the gospel accounts. And along the way, the main idea is I want you to see God's heart as lived out through Jesus, the Messiah. So it's a four-part conversation today. In part one, I'm just calling God's heart for women. So as we begin, I want to show you the first four of the women that Matthew includes in this genealogy. So here they are listed out. You have Tamar, who we already mentioned. We have a woman named Rahab, a woman named Ruth, and then we just get Uriah's wife. Now, we know that that person, her name is Bathsheba, and she's somebody who will end up married to King David. So I thought it'd be helpful just to use a picture. Now, I have no idea what these women actually look like, but we're talking about several women. There's a lot of stories that we're going to weave in and out of today, and so I thought we'd just put a picture on the screen and just to represent these four women, Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, and Bathsheba. And the first observation I want to make is just, again, something we've already said. Matthew included women in his genealogy, and this was unusual. I mean, people just really didn't do this in the ancient world. So the question is, why did Matthew choose to include women? And I believe the answer is, well, Jesus included women. And Matthew is trying to accurately represent who Jesus is. So let me take you to an account given to us by Luke. Luke is one of the gospel writers. He wrote a biography of Jesus' life. And he just kind of gives us a good example of how Jesus included women. So here we go. After this, Jesus traveled about from one town and village to another. He's proclaiming the good news of the kingdom of God. The 12 were with him, and also some women who had been cured of evil spirits and diseases. Mary, called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had come out. And if you're thinking, is that a lot of demons? I think it's a lot of demons. 7 demons had come out. Joanna, the wife of Chuza, who was the manager of Herod's household, and then Susanna, and many others. These women were helping to support them out of their own means. So here's what I want you to see here, is that Jesus had a whole lot of disciples. I mean, probably over 100 disciples. And out of this large group, there was the 12. The 12 apostles or the 12 disciples, and they were a subset. They were like the inner circle of Jesus. But among this larger group of disciples, there were women disciples that Jesus had invited to follow him. And some of these women, we can see from this passage, they were the ones who were financially funding. They were the ones who were supporting the ministry of Jesus. And I just feel like that's pretty significant. And so I'll just put this idea on the screen, and it's this right here. Jesus valued and elevated women. And I think it's important to point out that at this period of time in history, in Jewish society, I don't know of any other Jewish rabbi. Jesus was a Jewish rabbi. I don't know of any others who invited women to follow them. And so it appears Jesus was the only one who invited women, valued women, and elevated women in this way. Now, with that said, I totally understand that in our society, that there's definitely a viewpoint that, you know, hey, Christianity is actually anti-women. And Christianity is very patriarchal, and you've probably heard these arguments, and maybe you feel like there's even something to them. But I would just encourage you, read through the Gospels. Read through the four biographies of Jesus' life and watch Jesus. Because what you will see is Jesus never treats women as if they were less valuable than men. He honors. He dignifies, he values, and he elevates women. In fact, I would go as far to say that Jesus unleashed a revolution, a slow revolution of women's rights that really has directly influenced Western society, the society that we live in, the women's rights that we have in our society. I believe you can trace them really back to Jesus and the early church, because before Jesus, women were second class in really every society of the world. And so I think Jesus unleashed a slow revolution of women's rights. Jesus, he invited, he valued, and he elevated women. Now, I understand some of us maybe struggle with this concept or maybe have big feelings on this topic, and I just want to invite you to check out a resource. So there's a book here. It's called Jesus Through the Eyes of Women. It's written by Rebecca McLaughlin. And you can't really read the subtitle. I'll just read it to you. It says, How the First Female Disciples Help Us Know and Love the Lord. And so it's like written from the perspective of some of these early female disciples of Jesus. Great resource. Could be very helpful to you. And so I just recommend it to you. So Matthew, he writes this genealogy, and sort of surprisingly, he includes women. And the thing is he could have chosen from a lot of different women, because there's a lot of, all these, so-and-so is the father of the so-and-so, the father of, these guys were all married, and so there's a lot of women to choose from, and you would think that Matthew would have chosen some of the, very honorable matriarchs of the Jewish faith. Women like Sarah, the wife of Abraham, or Rebecca, the wife of Isaac. And it's interesting that some of the women that he chooses, back to these pictures, some of the women that he chooses, they're not even Jewish. Which, if his whole purpose is to, hey, Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, he includes non-Jewish women. Rahab, she's not Jewish, she's a Canaanite. Ruth, she's from Moab. And so it's kind of like, Matthew, what are you doing? Like, doesn't that hurt your argument? So this brings us to the second part of our conversation today. God's heart for the outsider. God's heart for the outsider. Matthew includes non-Jewish women. What is he doing? Well, I think it takes us back to week one. So in week one of our series, we explored, Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of David, the Son of Abraham. What does it mean that Jesus is the Son of Abraham? And we looked at this promise that God had given to Abraham. And I'll just put it on the screen for you. And the promise was like this: I will bless you, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. It's this promise that God gave to Abraham that through his family, God was going to bless all the peoples of the world. And we talked about how this promise is fulfilled in the person of Jesus. And so I think that's why Matthew is including non-Jewish women in his genealogy. He's showing his Jewish audience, Jesus is not just for us. The Messiah is not just for us. God wants to bless all people. And we see this in the life of Jesus. He lives this out. And one specific example I want to share with you, it happens in the region of Samaria. So here's a map. Okay, Jerusalem, that represents kind of the southern half of Israel. And then you have this place called Samaria, which was kind of stuck in the middle of Israel. And really the big thing you need to know about Samaria is that if you were a Jewish person, you didn't like Samaria. You didn't go to Samaria. You hated Samaritans because they were like half-breeds. They were traitors. They hated them. In fact, they would go all the way around Samaria to avoid Samaritans, but not Jesus. We're given this account in John chapter 4 where Jesus goes directly into Samaria, directly to a specific well, and directly to a specific woman. And so just a picture to represent this. You will find this account in John chapter 4, and I would love for you to read this week because it's just an amazing story that illustrates what kind of Messiah Jesus is, the heart that he has for outsiders. So Jesus is at this well with this Samaritan woman, And he asks her for a drink of water, and she's kind of like, why are you talking to me? I can give you about 20 reasons why you shouldn't be talking with me. You're Jewish. I'm a Samaritan. I mean, what is going on? And one of the things that Jesus says to her is fantastic. He says, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. And it's like, whoa, who is this guy? And he goes on to explain to her who he is. He reveals that he is the Jewish Messiah, the one that they've all been waiting for. And you're kind of like, okay, that's cool. What's the point? This is the first time he does this. The first time that he reveals who he actually is in the Gospel of John is to this woman who's a total outsider. A Samaritan that everybody hates. And I just believe this demonstrates God's heart for the outsider. That Jesus would reveal his true identity to somebody who was totally on the outside. You see, God's heart is for the outsider. And I just wonder if you feel like an outsider. I mean, maybe you're here today, maybe you're watching online today, and you didn't know the words of some of the songs that we sang. We talk about the Gospel of John, you're like, I don't know where that is. I don't know how to find that. You feel like a total outsider, and yet you just sense Jesus pursuing you. And I just want to say to you, I'm so glad that you're here, and you're so welcome here. And I believe Jesus is pursuing you. He wants a relationship with you. God's heart is for those who are on the outside, and he wants to bring them in to his family. But what about those of us who are insiders? I mean, what are we supposed to take away from this idea that God's heart is for the outsider? What about those of us who maybe grew up in church? Yeah, we know all the words to the songs. In fact, we know the words to all the hymns, the really old songs. And we've been following Jesus for years and years. What about us? Well, I think it's important for us to remember that Matthew wrote his gospel to insiders. Because Matthew was Jewish, Jesus was Jewish, his audience was Jewish. His whole point is to tell them Jesus is our Jewish Messiah. And yet, in the very beginning of his gospel, he brings in these non-Jewish women into the genealogy of Jesus. And it's like right out of the gate, he's challenging the insiders to say, God is for the outsiders. This Jesus is not just for us. He's not just our Messiah. He's their Messiah. And so he's challenging them to be like Jesus. And so here's a question. I want to challenge you with a question that I've really been wrestling with, and it's this right here. Is there room in your life for outsiders? Is there room in your life for people who are on the outside? And the thing that's been bothering me is that I feel very comfortable with my circle of friends and my circle of family and the places that I like to go and the things that I like to do. I have my schedule and I have my routine, and I'm just realizing there's not space to be interrupted. There's not room for outsiders. And we see Jesus intentionally going to Samaria. He pursues this woman. He reveals who he is to a total outsider. And I'm just realizing I've got to make space in my life. I've got to make room if I'm going to reflect the heart of God. And I just wonder if you do as well. Because God's heart is for the outsider. Now, Matthew, he includes these women. Some of them are not Jewish. They're outsiders. And it's something we just got to recognize, that in the ancient world, to be a woman, first off, and to be a woman on the outside, in the ancient world, that left you in a very vulnerable position. And so this brings us to the third part of our conversation today, and that is God's heart for the vulnerable. So back to this picture, we got these four women that Matthew chose to include in his genealogy. The third one from the left, Ruth. Now, Ruth has a book in the Old Testament that's devoted to her story. It's called the Book of Ruth. And just like I asked you to read John 4, if you can make time this week to read the Book of Ruth, it's not long, just a couple chapters, it is awesome. I love it. And just kind of like the headline of this book, it really is God's heart for vulnerable people. It's a beautiful story. And I'm going to attempt to just summarize it really quick. I'm not going to do it justice at all, but hey, if you read it this week, I think you'll really enjoy it and get a lot out of it. But the basic story is this. This woman, Ruth, she's from Moab. She marries into this Israelite clan, and everything goes wrong. All the men die. So her father-in-law, the family patriarch, he dies. Her husband, he dies. Her brother-in-law, he dies. All the men die, and the women of the family are left alone. And very sadly, in the ancient world, this put them in a very precarious position. Because there's no government support, there's no social security, there's no church benevolence. I mean, in the ancient world, it was like you are dependent on the men in your life to protect you and provide for you. And so in the ancient world, their situation, I mean, it's game over. They are in serious trouble. But God's heart is for the vulnerable. And God ends up rescuing, saving Ruth through, this is going to sound weird, an obscure law. An obscure law that God had given his people. And the law was essentially this. If you were a widow, if your husband had died, well, the requirement was that somebody, a man from your deceased husband's family, needed to step up and marry you and bring you into the family to provide for you, protect you, and to love you. And now, to our, you know, Western modern ears, this is like, what? That sounds absolutely nuts, right? I mean, can you imagine? But this is how the ancient world worked, and this was God's way to protect and provide for vulnerable women. And so this is what happened in Ruth's story. A man from her deceased husband's family, a guy by the name of Boaz, he steps forward and becomes what was called her kinsman redeemer. He marries her. He loves her. He brings her into his household and provides for her. And we know from reading the genealogy that Ruth is King David's great-grandmother. And we know that Ruth, I mean, she is in the line of the Messiah, Jesus. It's like she is Jesus' great-great-great-grandma or something like that. And so God, in a powerful way, redeems her story. But I think the reason that Matthew included her is because he wants us to know what kind of Messiah Jesus is. He wants us to know God's heart, and God's heart is for vulnerable people. And we see this in the life and the ministry of Jesus, how Jesus engages with people in very vulnerable space. And one story that comes to mind, it comes from Luke's gospel. There's this woman in this story. She's in an incredibly vulnerable space. She's been bleeding for 12 years. 12 straight years. I mean, just awful. And so there's like the physical side of this, which is just terrible. But in that time, in that culture, according to Jewish law, this made you unclean, which means you had to separate from society, separate from your family. You couldn't be around people. I mean, just 12 years of being alone. I mean, it's so lonely. And on top of that, I mean, she's broke. She's got nothing left because she spent all of her money on trying to find a cure with doctors for her ailment, and they have not been able to do anything for her. And so she's alone. She's broken, she's broke, and she's so, so vulnerable. But she hears about Jesus, this rabbi who apparently can heal people. And so he comes by, he's in her town, there's this big crowd around him, and so she just kind of sneaks in there and she reaches out and she touches him because she believes if he is a healer, maybe, just maybe. And so she touches him, and then, you know, Jesus stops, and he's like, oh, somebody touch me. And his disciples are like, dude, everybody's touching you. I mean, there's this huge crowd, and he's like, no, 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 somebody touch me. In fact, I got to show you the way he words it, because I think it's fantastic. He goes, oh, someone touched me. I know that power has gone out of me. I mean, what's that like? He's like, no, I felt the power. Went out. It went somewhere. You know, so now they're all stopped. Everybody's looking around like, who was it? You know, and this poor woman, she's already been through so much. And so she just tells him. She comes clean about everything. She tells him her whole story. And it's kind of like, well, why would she tell him everything? Because when she touched him, she was healed. The moment that she touched him, the bleeding stopped. And so she tells him the whole story. And now I just want you to see and I want you to feel Jesus' response. Then he said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. And there's just something so moving right there that he calls her daughter. Daughter, go in peace. And keep in mind, she stole his power. I mean, this was an unauthorized miracle. And he says to her, daughter, go in peace. I mean, it's so tender. It's so dignifying. He values her, and he heals her. And Jesus just demonstrates so powerfully and so vividly God's heart is for vulnerable people. And I just wonder if you need to hear that today, because you find yourself in vulnerable space, emotionally vulnerable, physically vulnerable, financially vulnerable. And I just wonder, are you scared? Are you worried? Are you wounded? I just want to tell you that God's heart is moving towards you, because God's heart is for vulnerable people. And just the words of Jesus, daughter, and I just want to remind you that because of the cross, because of what Jesus accomplished for us, we have the privilege of calling our Creator Father. And in turn, he calls you daughter. He calls you son. And God's heart is for the vulnerable. And I just want to tell you, if you are in vulnerable space, he's moving toward you. And so I would encourage you, move toward him. I mean, be like this woman. Grab hold of him. Because he is the safest, the gentlest, the strongest presence that you could ever have. So move toward him, because he's moving toward you. God's heart is for vulnerable people. Now, there's one last reason that I think that Matthew includes these five women in his genealogy. And I think it's to demonstrate, it's to show in a very vivid way that God's heart is to redeem. God's heart is to bring hope and to bring peace and to bring joy to desperate, broken, hopeless situations. And Jesus lived this out. But back to these first four women that Matthew included, Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, and Bathsheba. I mentioned at the beginning of our time that some of these stories are just incredibly painful and heartbreaking. Tamar, I don't know if you've ever read this story. It's in Genesis 38. It's hard to understand because it's so ancient, and like the customs of that culture is just a lot of like, wait, what now? But Tamar's story in some ways is similar to Ruth's, because they start the same. Tamar, she gets married to this guy. It's an arranged marriage, and he dies. And so we already know from talking about this with Ruth, this puts her in a very vulnerable position. But God has provided this law to take care of vulnerable women in this culture, right? Well, in this situation, the family abandons her. They totally reject her. They leave her on her own. And so now she's truly in a desperate situation. In the ancient world, I mean, you were dependent on men for protection and provision. She's in a desperate situation, and sometimes desperate people do desperate things. And so what she ends up doing, she dresses herself up like a prostitute. She tricks her father-in-law into sleeping with her. She ends up getting pregnant with twins. And when this whole thing comes to light, what's surprising is the father-in-law recognizes and admits, I was wrong. I was wrong for abandoning you and leaving you out to fend for yourself. And he ends up bringing her into his family clan and providing for her and the twins. Now, this is one of those stories that when you read it, you know, sometimes when you're reading the Bible, you're like, who's the hero here that I need to try to, you know, copy their behavior? There's no heroes in this one. And it's very messy. And it's like, yeah, it's a mess. And in some ways, you can understand why she did what she did, because she was absolutely desperate. But nobody's the hero in this story. And yet, God was involved. And she's included in the genealogy of Jesus. You have Rahab. Rahab was a pagan prostitute. She lived in Jericho. And when God's people, their armies, surrounded Jericho, they're about to conquer Jericho, they send spies in, and she decides to change sides because she's heard about God's, the God of Israel, and how powerful he is. And she changes teams, and she kind of joins the Israelites, and she then gets enfolded into the people of God. And you have Bathsheba. Bathsheba was involved in an affair with King David. Now, when the king says, you know, I need you to come to my palace and ends up, you know, sleeping with her, I mean, I don't know what kind of ability she had to say no to the king, but she participated in the affair. She ended up getting pregnant. King David decides to kill her husband, who was one of his friends, to cover up the whole thing. I mean, it's just a tragic mess. And you look at these situations, and it's just like, these are hopeless. These are so messed up. And yet, God was at work, and God brought redemption through them. I mean, it is just wild to me that these women, in a way, are like grandmothers of Jesus. They are in his family line, and Matthew chooses to point this out, to put this right in front of us. Why? Why does he do this? Because he wants us to know what kind of Messiah Jesus is. He wants us to know God's heart as it was lived out in Jesus. And God's heart is to redeem, to bring hope and joy and peace to absolutely hopeless situations. And we see this in the person of Jesus. He lived this out. One example that comes to mind for me is just the scene that the Apostle John gives us in his biography of Jesus' life. It's a very tragic scene. There's these religious leaders, and all they want to do is trap Jesus. They want to find a way, a rationale to have Jesus killed. And so they come up with this plan. They find this woman who's been caught in adultery. They bring her before Jesus, and I believe he's in the temple courts, which means there are tons of people around. They drag this poor woman in front of this crowd, and they say to Jesus, believing they can trap him, they say to him, In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Hey, our understanding is that according to the Jewish law, this woman deserves to die. What do you say, Jesus? And they want to trap him. And why did they think that this is going to work? Probably because they've observed Jesus, and they've seen his compassion. They've seen his grace for people, and they're thinking, if he won't follow the law, then we got him. And so what does Jesus do? I mean, how is he going to respond to this? He does something so fascinating. He bends down, and he starts writing in the dirt. And it's like, what's he doing? And unfortunately, John doesn't tell us what he wrote. We don't actually know what he wrote. I mean, my theory is he starts writing down the sins of these guys who have dragged this woman in front of him. And the reason I think that is because he starts writing, and then he says, "Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." And then he bends back down, and he starts writing some more. And then slowly, ever so slowly, they all walk away. All these accusers melt away, and pretty soon it's just Jesus and this woman. And I just want you to see, and I want you to feel how Jesus talks to her. Jesus straightened up and he asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." And it's just encounters like this that just make me love Jesus. The way he's so gentle, he's so shrewd, he's so kind, and he's truthful. I mean, he tells her, okay, now go and change. Leave your life of sin. But these words, I just want to put these words on the screen for you. Neither do I condemn you. He gives her mercy. Neither do I condemn you. Now, I just want you to picture something. I want you to picture yourself standing in the place of that woman. She's absolutely guilty. She is condemned. She should be punished. And I want you to picture yourself standing in that place, because the truth is, before God, every single one of us is 100% guilty. And we stand condemned. And we deserve the punishment. And yet, because of what Jesus was willing to do, how he went to the cross and he suffered and died, because of this, you too can hear these words, then neither do I condemn you. Because Jesus was condemned in our place. He took our punishment so that God could say to us, then neither do I condemn you. Now go and leave your life of sin. You see, God's heart is to redeem every single story. He did this in the lives of these women that were mentioned. He did this. Jesus did this. I mean, this encounter with this woman, it was designed to send this woman's life in a different direction. And every encounter with Jesus can be a redemption encounter. Your story can be redeemed. It doesn't matter what you have done. I mean, try to match up your story with Tamar's. It doesn't matter. God's heart is to redeem. And so today is an opportunity. I'll just put these words on the screen one more time. Neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin. Today is an opportunity to trust Jesus and to go in a different direction. Because there is grace in the cross and there is power in the cross to take your life in a totally different direction. So Matthew, he does something very surprising in this genealogy. He includes the names of a couple women. And why does he do this? He wants us to know what kind of Messiah Jesus is. He wants us to know that God's heart is for women. And God's heart is for outsiders. God's heart is for vulnerable people. And God's heart is always to redeem. God, Matthew wants us to see the heart of Jesus. Now, as we close, you may have noticed something. And that is, I said a couple times that Matthew includes five women's names in this genealogy. And we've only talked about four of them. So who's the fifth? Who's the fifth woman? Ah, at the very end of the genealogy, we find this. Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary. And Mary was called the mother of Jesus, who is called the Messiah. The fifth woman that is mentioned by Matthew is Mary, the mother of Jesus. And there's something about the four women that come before that all lead up and point to Mary and some of the tragedy of her story. But most importantly, it points to the fact that Mary gave birth to the Messiah, Jesus. And next weekend, we get to celebrate the birth of this Messiah. And along the way, we're going to talk a little bit about Mary's story. And so I hope you're able to join us next week as we celebrate Christmas together. So let me pray for you, and we'll wrap up. Heavenly Father, we've been talking about your heart. And God, you have revealed yourself through your scriptures to be a God that is just amazing. And so, God, we honor you and we worship you. God, we want to live our lives for you. We want to know you and walk with you. And God, we just ask that you would shape us to become more and more like you so that we can represent you in this world. And so, God, we pray these things in the name of Jesus. Amen. Hey, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you next week as we celebrate Christmas.